Hi, this is Josh Fonger, and welcome to the WTS podcast, where we help business owners move from owning a job to owning a business, mastering their systems so they can simplify growth. And today I've got special guest, Tim Francis. So Tim owns a company called The Great Assistant, and it's helped hire over 150 assistants. Over the last 10 years, he's been refining his method and has it down to a science. Today, he'll be sharing his three-part method. Tim has been a guest lecturer at NYU and is a regular contributor to Forbes. I met Tim because he was actually one of my WTS students a handful of years ago. I saw amazing results, and we've stayed in touch ever since. So Tim, let's get started. Let's hear your story. So how'd you get started with The Great Assistant?
So first of all, thanks for having me here, Josh. It's just, I always am so happy to see your name in my inbox because what you helped me with through the WTS method totally revolutionized how I did business, and I wouldn't have the business today if it weren't for a handful of really important people on my path, including you and including obviously Sam with his book. So just before I go any further, I just thank you so much. It's always such a pleasure to be with you.
Well, good. Well, thanks, Tim. Yeah. And it's, I know, and just kind of inside story here, but I mean, when Tim was in the group coaching program, I think it was like 5 years ago, many years ago, just starting out, he was getting the best results out of anybody in the class by far. And I was like, I'm just going to kind of keep tabs on Tim. I wonder what's going to happen with him. So now his, you know, trajectories, you know, Forbes and guest lecturer at NYU. So just amazing results. So I'm proud of you really taking the method and then applying it to what we're going to talk about today, which is, the Great Assistant, which is something that I've been talking to you about personally, just for me, hiring myself a great assistant. So let's dive into it. So tell me about you and how you started this company.
So 10 years ago, I was in my basement and I had three roommates just to help me cover my rent. And I was struggling to make ends meet. But you know what, Josh? I was actually really happy because I was free, right? It was like I didn't have a day job anymore. And even though cash was in question, the future just seemed like so, so bright. And as I started getting more clients, and at the time I had a different business, I actually had a marketing agency. Mm-hmm. As I started getting more clients, suddenly my business shifted because now there was more administration and paperwork and operational type stuff, kind of ticky-tack minutiae that it's not what I really wanted to be doing. So I said, I know what to do. Because I'd read the 4-Hour Workweek, I said, I'm going to go overseas. I'm going to hire an Indian assistant. And then just unicorns are going to fly through the sky again. It's going to be amazing, right? So I did that, and I actually hired an agency to help me do it. And they did find me a great assistant that was a wonderful woman, great English, all the rest. Then like a series of things happened, and because of the radically different time zone, language, culture, and actually like government instability of India, she actually ended up having her electricity and internet turned off. And it shocked me to realize that my business was running on me depending on an assistant, and that assistant was depending on like the infrastructure politically and otherwise of India. And I was just like, I don't think I can do it. So I tried also the Philippines, I tried Jamaica, I tried Pakistan, I tried like all over the world. Mm-hmm. And again, those same three issues came up again: time zone, culture, and first language. And so I just got frustrated and I said, forget it. I'm just going to do this all myself. So that's fine because then I didn't have to solve problems. I didn't have to deal with third world infrastructure or anything. But now I had a new problem, and that's that my 70-hour work weeks were now 90-hour work weeks because I was doing it all myself again. Yep. So between the exhaustion of the 90-hour work weeks, and there's a few kind of curveballs that happened that were very stressful in my business. There was just some very upsetting things that had happened. I ended up developing an illness. Mm-hmm. Stress-related, called erythema nodosum. And the result of that was I actually couldn't walk for 3 months. My business went to zero. I had to move back in with my parents full-time. I could barely even get out of bed. And so like had my mom not paid my mortgage for me for 3 months, I would have gone bankrupt. So it was during that time that I came across a quote that has stuck with me forever. It's, hell is meeting the man I could have been. Mm-hmm. Hell is meeting the man I could have been. And that, like, when you're laying in bed and you can't walk, I mean, goodness gracious, even today, now that I can walk, it still sticks with me big time, right? And so in that moment, I realized that, like, in my lifetime, I will fulfill my potential. Uh-huh. And all of my concerns around like, well, someone can't do it as well as me, or, you know, I don't want to let go of control, or how do I even find an assistant, or all my past frustration. Like, I became pretty jaded with all my bad experiences overseas. And I realized that all of that, I needed to rise above it. And I needed to figure out, because I believe life is a team sport and I believe business is a team sport. And I knew that I would never, ever fulfill my potential as long as I was trying to do everything myself. Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you what, Josh, I didn't know how I would afford a North American assistant, like at $15 to $20 an hour, is way more expensive than $4 an hour overseas. I didn't know what I would delegate first. I didn't even know where I would find a North American assistant. I was way lost in the woods, and I had yet to find anyone or anything that would teach me how to do it. So I just kind of like had to take a leap of faith because there was no turning back. And so 5 years ago, I put up a few postings around the internet and I met Sarah, who mm-hmm. to this day is still my assistant. Mm-hmm. And we started small, but as things picked up steam, she did more and more work for me. She was taking more and more of the lower end work off my plate. And it allowed me to actually increase my consulting rate because now I could focus on meeting more clients. I could focus on developing new skills and products and services. Mm-hmm. And I could also focus on marketing, like marketing, sales, and product development, really. Mm-hmm. And my consulting rate went from $40 an hour to $50 an hour to $100 an hour to $250 to $500 to $1,000 an hour, and still climbing. Mm-hmm. And I also had the time, energy, and headspace, like even just the mental RAM, to figure out how I could become a guest lecturer at NYU and get into Forbes as a regular contributor and spend time doing things like you and I are doing today, because previously I wouldn't have even had the time to do it.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing for entrepreneurs to get, no matter where they are, is that in order to have the headspace, in order to have the time to take on special projects, the daily tasks need to get done by somebody. Right. And right. You want to have somebody you can trust. So what are some things that you delegated in the beginning to Sarah? Like, how did that help you in the beginning? How'd you choose what to give her?
Yeah. And so to me, it's like the total solution is three parts, okay. Right? And delegation is part two. Part three is who do we hire? And I would say part one is actually vision. Okay. And what I mean by vision is how could I see someone being a part of my bigger picture to actually help me replace myself? And if someone's got a bigger business and they've got more than 5 or 10 employees, then maybe they've already replaced themselves in some key roles. So in that case, our vision needs to be a little bit different, is what is more like the day-to-day that I can hand off. And so in my case, some of the tasks that I originally, when I was going overseas, some of my thoughts were like, oh, like I'm going to create just a very specific procedure. They're going to follow it. They're never going to deviate. And that's that. Mm-hmm. You can do that, but it really limits how much an assistant can really do for you. Mm-hmm. Part of having a North American assistant that is similar, same time zone, culture, and same first language, they're able to make decisions.
Right.
And I know you guys call them operating principles. We call them decision-making guidelines, yeah. Similar idea. Mm-hmm. And it's really that idea that, like, in the beginning, I want an assistant that, yes, they can just do the repetitive, simple tasks that have no deviation. But I want that same assistant to graduate with me so now they can make simple decisions. Like, for example, if a customer service request comes in and it's, you know, hey, Tim, can I get a refund or an exchange for something? I want the assistant to be able to answer that without asking me for help. So right. I could give them an operating principle or a DMG that says if it's less than $50, just fix it. Don't mm-hmm. worry about it, right? Mm-hmm. And I want that assistant to graduate from simple tasks and simple decisions to harder decisions. So for example, I don't know if you've ever tried to unpack the process of booking a flight.
But I have with a client before. It's awful.
It's unbelievable. Like if you're to create a flow chart of if this, then that, is so complicated. Like it seems simple, but it's so complicated, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, does Tim want an aisle seat or a row, you know, so he's not disturbed, or a row seat so he can go pee? Does Tim want certain airlines? Does Tim want to do morning flights or the night before flights, or like with points or with credit card? Like it is unbelievable. So that being said, I want an assistant that can grow with me to even take care of those levels of mm-hmm. decisions. And it doesn't stop there, Josh. I want an assistant that can actually help me at the highest level, which is just simply said, I want them to handle outcomes. Mm-hmm. And so even if I don't know how they're doing all the steps along the way. Even if I don't know all the decisions they're making along the way, if they're hitting my outcome, then I'm good. So for example, this past year, my assistant, Sarah, she booked our entire annual event, which was in San Diego. Mm-hmm. We had people flying in from Singapore, China, the United States, Canada, with between 50 and 100 people there. She took care of every pin, every lanyard, every notebook, catering, AV, everything. I gave her, we agreed to a $31,000 budget ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Josh, she came within 1.6% of budget. And all I had to do was prepare my speaking points, show up, and do the speaking role. I didn't have to do the coordinating role, the maintenance role, the customer service role, the payment processing role, the website setup role. Like, I didn't do any of that. I literally was the lead singer of the band. I showed up, I sang, and then that was that. So, like, it's just... That's not possible if you're working with someone for $4 an hour overseas.
Right. And I think it's also not possible without the vision, because if most people have a vision that's, okay, my assistant is just going to do one thing, you're not going to get anywhere. But if you realize that you're going to break apart, that Sarah didn't learn all those things in a day, right? No. It took her some time and she built upon. I think that's one of the key things for satisfaction of your team, which does matter, is they grow too. And as they grow, they actually enjoy their work more. They're more engaged. So that 100%. Vision, without that vision for any company, it's like the vision comes first, not a great company. Then we'll add this vision statement once we're at $10 million. No, you got to actually have it when you're by yourself. Then you got to have the vision.
Right. 100%. Yep.
So you get the vision. And then what's the next kind of phase there?
Yeah, well, and so just to give more real world examples, like I think someone who's done a great job of the vision piece is one of our clients. Her name's Nicole, and she runs a company that actually helps podcasters manage the guests and helps guests find podcasts to be on. So she's like a PR agent for them. She's got a company called Interviews That Convert. And so she's hired actually three assistants from us now. And I've just watched her, how she replaced herself effectively in actually creating the content, getting it edited, getting it all prepared, show notes, headshots, all the rest. She also replaced herself in coordinating all the guests and all of her clients. And then she now, her third assistant is helping to do all the flights and email inbox and all the rest. And so I've just watched methodically how she's gone along and replaced herself in section one of her business and then section two and section three. And so now she's like free to come fly to a dinner party that I'm hosting in Austin, because I host dinner parties all the time in Austin for entrepreneurs. And she's going to meet other high-end entrepreneurs at the dinner party. She couldn't do that if she was stuck coordinating headshots and bios, right? So I think it's really amazing to watch people go through this transformation. So that's kind of vision. And I think most entrepreneurs start at who should I hire, which is actually step three. And so like flipping it 180 degrees is what creates success. So starting with vision, then after that saying, what are the specifics of what I would delegate and how would I delegate it?
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that's step two of the three steps. And when it comes to specifically what to delegate, I want everyone to think about themselves as the surgeon in the room. Right. Mm-hmm. So, if we take all the steps that are involved in surgery, it's actually pretty unbelievable. Like it's probably 500 steps to actually do surgery. When we start thinking about initial intake, looking at x-rays, making a diagnosis, then there's like the legal releases and the financial part. And then there's preparing the room and booking all the nurses to be there and sterilizing the tools and blah, 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 right? It's like a bazillion steps. If we left that as one big thing called surgery, it'd be impossible for the surgeon to delegate it. However, if by breaking it into all the sub pieces, if we unpack it, and that's such a huge key to delegation is unpacking. Mm-hmm. If we unpack into all the sub steps, now all of a sudden we can say, okay, the billings person is going to handle the paperwork, and the head nurse is going to coordinate the nurses, and the janitor is going to clean the room, and blah blah blah. Now all of a sudden we can delegate, and so that's such a shortcut. Is any time an entrepreneur says I can't delegate something, oftentimes my answer is, okay, if we unpack this, we'll probably discover that there's four categories of tasks. Yep. One is high level skill. The other is high level access. The other is strategy. I want the entrepreneur to hold on to those three things. So if it was a surgeon, the strategy would be, what's the diagnosis and what's the approach? Perfect. So then what's the high level skill is actually doing the surgery. And high level access is like the surgeon calling other surgeons for opinions and or signing off on prescriptions or different orders, right? Yeah. Then there's everything else. That's the fourth category, is everything else. Cleaning the room, coordinating the patient, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And guess what? Everything else should be done by everyone else. Uh-huh. And so what sticks out to me from the WTS training, and this is going a ways back, because I know Sam interviewed a guy who's a copywriter, and the copywriter said, oh, well, a lot of people think you can't delegate anything about copywriting because it's such a high-level skill. It's very specialized. Right. It takes a long time to learn it. And the copywriter said, well, I can have the, I could delegate coordinating the people that I interview, right? As I'm learning about the topic that I'm writing about. And I could also delegate some of the research and. And effectively what he was doing is he's saying, I'm still the one that's putting pen to paper. I'm still the one that's interviewing the people when I'm getting to know about a new market. But it's the, it's someone else who's going to take care of all the research coordination, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That example was a paradigm shift for me too, because it's like, I think that process was like a 30-hour process and then he did it in like 3 hours. So it still took time, but there was so much of it that was actually not, what do you say, high level, high access and high strategy.
Right.
So.
Right. 100%. So I think like once we get a sense of like, okay, I've got this vision for this assistant who can carry me to higher and higher levels. And actually my assistant now has an assistant, right? Mm-hmm. So people are graduating up in my organization now. And so once you get a sense of what's possible with an assistant, then from there, if we start identifying, okay, what is it that's even possible for me to delegate for my day to day? Then the third part is for us to go into, okay, great. So now I've got a sense of like, you know, here's the non-surgical parts of surgery that I'm going to delegate. And now I need to get into hiring. And that's the third part of the process that I've identified. And so we've hired over 150 assistants now. The industry stick rate is less than 50%, unfortunately, for all hourly workers. And currently we're sitting at 84, we float between 84% stick rate to like 86, 87% stick rate. So, and now I attribute that, and I'm going to reveal like kind of what goes into that. What goes into that is we will spend between 50 and 100 hours to find one winning assistant. And we will look at 50 to 100 candidates to come down to one assistant. Now, obviously at the top of the funnel, when we've got like 100 applicants coming in, we're not looking at all of them really deeply. We have some different processes to look at. So here's a really great tip that someone could do right away if they wanted to hire their own assistant, is when we do the job posting, we ask for assistants to apply using a very specific format. So we'll say in the first paragraph, give us two reasons why you'd be a great assistant in blue font, Verdana, 12 point. In the second paragraph, red font, Arial, 10 point. Third paragraph, Times New Roman, black, 9 point. And if they, and the subject line of the email is also very specific. Like we tell them what to put in the subject line. And if they don't, if they can't even get the welcome hello email right, disqualified. And like part of the email that they need to follow is also do not attach a resume. And the number that still attach a resume anyways, because they're not following directions, is it's amazing. So Josh, like I'm telling you, probably like 20 or 30 or 40% of people disqualify themselves just through that. So I want to watch people work and I want to see if they can follow instructions, follow procedures, if they have attention to detail. I want all of this and I want to do it on a mass scale, because too often entrepreneurs will just go on Facebook and say, who knows a good assistant, right? And they hire their sister-in-law and it just ends up being a mess. Like no wonder, right?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I love that example because I remember you, I mean, I think you came up with that years ago, because I remember you telling me about this way to filter things out through this the questioning. I remember this story vividly. So very cool. So this is part of your process, is like the qualifying process or the first step.
At the very, very top, yeah. And so part of what makes the process successful is that it takes 50 to 100 hours. And what we do during those 50 to 100 hours is, yes, there's some simple kind of high-level stuff there. As people are filtering down, we're actually doing multiple work tests. So an example of a work test is like, go onto Facebook, create an event, and invite five friends to it. And it could be a fictitious event, you know, a birthday party for your child or something. And then write a procedure about how you did that on Facebook. Now, without giving them any training at all, I want to know, does their brain think sequentially, logically, and have, that, again, that attention to detail? Are they including screenshots for ease of use? Like, so that before we ever actually train them, are they showing up at our front door with some abilities that are just kind of native knowledge? And if the starting, if I can start the 100 meter race with an assistant that's like already at the 30 or 40 meter mark, like obviously we're going to win that race a lot easier. So, so we're doing a handful of work tests like that. We're also doing a few interviews again, just to, again, see if there's some good personality, make sure that their English is good. I mean, it sounds so crazy that we have to test for these things, but there's even interview fraud, right? Or I'm sorry, application fraud, where one person will submit a resume and do everything with great English online, but then you meet them in person. You're like, you didn't write your own submission, the red font, blue font submission. You didn't do that, right? So it's unbelievable the number of ways, just the things that we come across. So on top of that, we also do technology tests to make sure they've got good skills. If you're going to work virtually, you got to have good skills and not be intimidated by the internet and technology. We're also doing intelligence tests, right? So like an IQ test, we don't do IQ specifically, but IQ type test. We also do the Kolbe index. So multiple people on our team are now certified in the Kolbe method. And we're able to unpack work tests. So all of that allows us to get to about 97% certainty. And then whoever the entrepreneur is, if it's me that's hiring for myself or someone else, we'll do a final interview to kind of see the last 3%. So that's what we put into it, and hopefully that gives people a sense of like how far you can go with this.
And then you have a system now, because you're doing it at volume, where somebody else doing this, their business is not hiring. So to put that on is very difficult. I've got another client where he a big part of his business is hiring. And it's very similar to what you're saying, is he has a process where basically for every 100 people that come through, one is the right person. You might try this out, but one of his tricks along the way is when he gets down to about 10 out of the 100, maybe more like five, he gives them a task and he pays them to do the task. And about two out of the five can actually do a pretty good job. Three out of the five do pretty bad. But so he'll pay them for doing the task, and then he'll be able to use what they did for his business anyways. So it breaks even, basically.
Interesting.
So it's a break even working interview, basically, where he can make, actually make some money on people he never hires.
Yeah. Kind of interesting. Super interesting. Yeah. Well, and I think that's really like, I didn't appreciate how much, like, I mean, this is such a crucial hire. This is your right-hand person. And so a question that I asked myself when I was sick and I couldn't walk, I don't know where this came. It was like divine intervention or something, is I asked myself this question. I said, what would have to be true that the next person I hire, I would be overjoyed to be with them for at least 3 years? And all of a sudden the game changed, because if I'm making a 3-year commitment in my mind to someone, I'm going to be way pickier about who I choose. I'm gonna shift my thinking from training as a pain in the butt that I don't want to have to do to being like, this is the most important thing that I do. And I'm gonna want to meet with them every single week to make sure that we are on track, because I have to live with them for the next 3 years.
I think that's the commitment level. I think is a lot of folks don't have that. They just see them as a little cog in the wheel as opposed to a big part of their business. And I think, I hope when you get to this concept that I know I saw you did a video on, it's called the Trough of Sorrow. Yeah. But there's this idea of, I mean, you have to invest in the beginning, you don't get a return on investment. So how does that work?
Yeah. So I think every entrepreneur, at least most entrepreneurs, have this fantasy that, oh, I'm just going to hire someone, they're going to take everything over. Right. And then after that, I'm going to be free to go make money again. Right. And the fact of the matter is, I would call that the lottery mindset of like, oh, if I just meet the right partner, I'm going to get married and I'm going to be happy forever. If I just have the right funnel or the right product and I launch it, I'm going to make $1 zillion and everything's going to be fine. It's that, if I just win American Idol, I'm going to get a recording contract and everything's going to be perfect, you know? So like our culture just has that, and human beings, like if I just have the right diet pill, I'm going to lose 30 pounds. Like That's just our culture. And that does seep into getting an assistant as well. The truth of the matter is when it comes to getting an assistant, it's actually the polar opposite. We actually are worse off for the first kind of 2 to 4 weeks because they're actually taking some of our time and energy and focus away from the revenue generating activity. Mm-hmm. And because now we need to like hire and train and onboard and make sure that they've got what they need and all the rest. And so there's actually this dip down in productivity. If we stick with it though, it starts to climb and climb and we start climbing up and over time we'll actually hit a break even point. And that can come within kind of 2 to 4 weeks if we're really, really committed and focused to bringing that assistant up to speed. Mm-hmm. And that break even point is the point where you spend a couple hours training your assistant on something and now they are able to go and do that and they take it off your plate. So now you're break even. Stick with it even further with the process of training and upgrading your assistant all the time. And they will very quickly meet your expectation, your original lottery level expectation. And the most crazy thing is if you stick with it even further, they end up surpassing all your expectations. So like my assistant today, like I said, she planned and executed the entire, you know, annual event. She handles 97% of my email inbox. She handles all of my travel. When I go to a city, I actually prefer to be in an Airbnb. So I have a full kitchen. And so by the time so she picks the Airbnb, she books the flight. By the time I arrive at that condo, all my favorite groceries are already sitting in the fridge when I get there. It is so cool. And with the amount that I travel and speak and whatnot, like I would be 300 pounds if I was always eating, you know, hotel food, right? So it's just really, really changed my life, literally. Uh-huh. Yeah. So that trough of sorrow is that period between when you hire the assistant to when you hit the break-even point, because you're worse off and you're like, oh no, this isn't working. This is such a waste of time. Mm-hmm. I don't want the complexity or the time suck, et cetera, of training and managing and onboarding. And when in fact, that is the price of admission that you just got to pay to play the game.
So who should play the game? So, you know, people listening to this, a lot of them don't have an assistant yet. And I usually do kind of, you know, with their vision, I kind of plan out, you know, here's your current org chart, you know, you, two employees or one employee, and then here's where you want to be in 2 years or whatever. And usually in there is an assistant. So how do you let them know when is the right time to pull the trigger on that kind of shift in their business or investment?
So everything changed for me, Josh, when I realized that my assistant was not a cost center, mm-hmm. but rather a profit center. So an assistant, if they're just in isolation and you're paying them $17 to $20 an hour or something like that, it mm-hmm. seems like they're just an expense.
Yeah.
I, however, realized that not just my assistant, but my relationship with my assistant is where the profit center was. Mm-hmm. Now, you, Josh, me, Tim Francis, and anyone listening, I'm telling it like as entrepreneurs, it's ridiculous to spend money and not expect a return on investment. Mm-hmm. And so if someone can't see a return on investment for the money they put into their relationship with their assistant, it's too early. Don't do it. When I look back, I got my first assistant too early. And when I talk to entrepreneurs one-on-one, I'm always asking the question, and I'm pretty rigorous about holding, you know, each entrepreneur to a high standard of like, okay, if we go and spend, say, $600 to $1,000 a month on wages on a part-time assistant, then what are you going to do with the extra time to justify the expense?
Hmm. Okay.
Right. So Sarah started uploading podcast episodes for me. She started sending customer invoices in the very beginning, and that freed me up in my specific situation to go to my current clients and say, because at the time I had a marketing company, I said, you know, we're already doing online ad management for you. I think if we added email marketing, we could see some exciting results. You know, if we created some custom landing pages for you, if we started doing some other work for you, this would look really good. And you know what, Josh? I went to like 4 clients, I think it was. 3 said yes. And I was booking myself for $40 an hour work doing marketing consulting work and turning around and paying Sarah $15. So now there was a spread between what I was charging and what I was paying Sarah, right? And that $25 gap then gave me more cash to hire Sarah for more hours, which then made this positive loop happen around. And now I had more time and more money, which then allowed me to fly further, to go to bigger events, to pay the tuition, $3,000, $5,000, sometimes $10,000 for a 2-day event, to meet just higher and higher level people all the time who had more and more money to be able to spend with me. And that was the virtuous cycle that kicked things off for me. So oftentimes entrepreneurs will say, oh, Tim, of course you have an assistant because you charge $1,000 an hour now. Of course you have an assistant. And to which I reply, it's actually the exact opposite. I charge $1,000 an hour today because I got an assistant back when I was charging only $40 an hour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It takes that vision and the ability to stick with it through the long haul. And there's no point in sticking with it if you pick the wrong person from the beginning, which I think is so important people to hear, is that you really want to make sure you pick the right people and have a process for doing it. Don't just hope and get lucky, because that is definitely a lotto situation.
And I think, like, you know, really, really being excited about this process is, it's so worth it. Like another great story, true story, someone else that we helped guide through this process. So he heard a presentation similar to this. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm just going to skip the steps. I'm just going to kind of go do it my own way. He posted something on Facebook, found, you know, he hired the first person he saw, skipped all the advice that I had given, and hired the person. They were great for a bit, and then they quit because they just went a different direction, right? So fast forward like 6 months after that, and he said, oh, Tim, you know, could you remind me of some of the steps? So I did. And so over the following 6 months, he did the steps. It didn't take all 6 months, but he eventually found his great assistant. And then from there, in the last 6 months of the story, so first 6 months, he said, I'm going to skip the advice. The middle 6 months, he said, I'm going to do the advice. And then that allowed him the time, energy to go and launch a new product that had been on his mind for like 5 or 6 years, but he just never got around to launching it. He launches it, Josh, and within 6 months, he made an extra $250,000. So how much money was he leaving on the table by not having an assistant? And like, had, like, where would he be today had he actually done it right in the first place? He'd have a whole extra year. He could have yet another $250,000 project product on the table. So there's something about to be said about opportunity cost and like the time value of money. Like if you don't take action today on whatever it is you want to do, like, what are you missing out on? Right.
Exactly. Yeah. The thing is, there's things that owners have to do that no one else can do. So, and what I find with a lot of companies is, it's not that the owners, it's that no one's doing those things. So no one's actually doing product development or research or PR. They're not doing any of those things. They're too busy on the day-to-day. And so they don't see, well, they say, well, if an assistant comes in here, I've had a client say this, well, if somebody does this work for me, then what do I do? It's like, well, you be an owner. You have no one's doing these things. You know, you get to be the owner. Right now you're just an employee, and there's no owner. There's no leader in this company. So that's why it's not going anywhere. And so they never realize that those things, you know, the innovation that it takes to be competitive long-term, somebody has to do that. And that takes effort. They had no one doing HR. They had no one doing, no one was reviewing their financials. It was just like, you know, this is, it's kind of scary. Well, that's cool. So I know you're tight with time, but I've got a couple other quick questions. So I know this is one that people are thinking about. So what are some warning signs? So you get an assistant. What should you look for that should make you pause and say, gosh, I probably should fire this person or hold them accountable? Do you have any kind of tips from the field about that?
Yeah. So I wouldn't say that the Colby assessment will tell you who's going to be a great assistant, because there's a lot that goes into that. However, for us, we have a hard stop. Do not hire someone if a person doesn't have certain Colby characteristics. So literally, like it won't tell you who's a great fit, but it'll tell you who's a horrible fit, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of reasons why a person may not fit, but I would go do the Colby test, and I would make sure that the assistant has, and obviously we don't have time for like a full Colby explanation here, but someone with significant follow-through energy, look for that on the Colby test. The Colby test is $49. You can get it from the Colby.com website. If you ping us, we can also sell it. It's the same price through us. It doesn't matter either way. And we want to see significant follow through energy, because that's what tells us that someone is orderly, organized, can unpack things, create systems and procedures, follow systems and procedures, and also close loops. So you can say, in 3 months, remind me of this thing. And they'll write it down, and 3 months later, they'll get back to you and they'll follow through and close loops for you.
Wow. Okay. So that's a big one. And then one other one, how about accountability? Because I know a lot of folks they are afraid to hire one because they're like, well, I'm not going to see their work. I don't want to spend time managing them or holding them accountable. How do you recommend people actually do that?
So, and I'll offer this as a resource. Anybody could go to greatassistant.com/toolbox. And there's a link there to a tool called 360 delegation.
Okay.
And I think that implicit to us wanting to grow ourselves and our businesses is we have to go from doing the work to actually leading the work. And so if the better that we are at clearly defining the vision of what we want done, the resources required to do it, and what definition of done actually looks like, those three things, that's what I identify as 360 delegation. Mm-hmm. The crisper that the assistant will get things done, the less they'll have to stop and ask you for help, and the more that you'll have a common understanding of what success actually looks like here, thereby avoiding a lot of the accountability and execution problems. So it's greatassistant.com/toolbox.
Good. Well, so on top of that, so I'm sure a lot of people listening to this are, you know, thinking about getting an assistant. I know I've been talking to you about it. Where would they go? What's kind of the next step? Is there a website they should go to? I'm assuming the Great Assistant would be the first place to go.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, If folks are interested in getting some feedback from us on if it's a good time for them to get an assistant or not, because like I said, I actually got my first assistant too early. Mm-hmm. If anybody wants to, they can go to greatassistant.com/apply. And there's a calendar there to meet with Peter from my team. He'd be happy to schedule a breakthrough call with you to hear about your situation. And he'll give you feedback on if it's too early or not. We oftentimes are all sold out of assistants, and so no need to fear about it being like any kind of timeshare presentation. Like, we're very full with business, and so we're happy just to spend some time to give you some feedback. In that call, it's usually 45 minutes or less, and any question that you've got, you can address, and Peter can help you out. He's not just a really smart business guy, he's also a dear friend to me. So you're in great hands if you go chat with him.
Good. Well, very good. Well, thanks again, Tim. And for everyone watching or listening to this, hopefully you got some good ideas about, you know, how to find your next assistant. And Tim shared some great ideas about how he filtered through and found them. So again, Tim, thanks for your time. Thanks for the wisdom. And thanks everybody for watching. Catch you soon.